Hey everybody, Jay Cooper, Ian Kundle, Josh North, Baseball America Prospect Podcast, and we are excited to talk about the top 30s today because, as you probably know, hopefully already know, over at baseballamerica.com, we have updated all 30 MLB teams' top 30 prospect rankings. And when I say update, I don't mean that we removed graduations, moved everyone up, and added a guy or two. I'm saying that we went through the entirety of the list, and we went and reordered everything. We wrote reports for new players. We did, if there was a player at the back of a list and we're like, oh, that guy probably shouldn't be on the 30 anymore, we found someone new. If there was someone who we thought should be on the 30, but there was someone who was better than that, we put that player on. I think 113 new additions to that, full new reports, in addition to moving other players up and down and all that. Check it all out, baseballamerica.com. But here on the podcast, here on the YouTube video today, we are going to talk about it. And we're going to dive straight into this, just jumping right in. Josh, I'll start with you. Every time we do this, one of the fun things about it, it's a lot of work, but it's also a lot of fun. We hear about players. We get to kind of learn more about players. What did you, and organizations too, what is something that you kind of, as you went through this process, you kind of came away like, oh, I feel like, you know, that kind of stood out to me. That was something interesting that I learned doing this.
It just kind of reinforced how fungible the back of these lists are, because you and you in particular, JJ, know that I pull my hair out every cycle trying to figure out the back of the list. I've been here for 13 years, so you can see it. And you realize that in, you know, 5 months or however long it's been since the book went out, it's going to change drastically. Some guys are going to graduate, so you create some inertia, but you're going to hear about guys, you know, you didn't hear about in other systems. You know, especially with like a draft guy who might not have pitched in the, you know, after draft last year, and you really don't have anything to go on if he's a late rounder and he jumps up. I'm kind of previewing a guy I'm going to talk about later, but you know, there are other guys who, you know, get better over the course of the offseason and jump back up. There were guys in some of my systems who were firmly not top 30, and I felt pretty confident about it, and now they're in the 20s, and that's just how these things go sometimes. It's not my fault. It's just they got better, or sometimes they got worse.
Ian, what about you? Any teams that kind of you came away a little bit more impressed with, less impressed with?
Yeah, I think one that I was very surprised with was how much the Braves farm system has improved this year. I know over the offseason we talked a lot about how it was one of the weakest farm systems in all of baseball, and they've had three position players specifically take really big steps forward this year. Eric Hartman, who I think you guys talked to, you and Jeff talked about last week. And then Yon Heel and Tate Southesine have also taken pretty big steps forward. And they also have some hitters kind of lower in the tier. Luis Guanipe and Owen Carey, a couple other guys who have taken a step forward this year. And I think going in, I looked at my systems that I did, and I ended up doing six total, and they were the weakest of the group, I thought. But after, you know, kind of evaluating, going through everything, I don't think they are in as bad a spot as kind of was expected or people thought heading into the season.
I would say with mine, the two that jumped out is doing the White Sox is kind of goes back to what Josh's point. Like, you get to the back of these lists and they're kind of fungible. But the other thing about that is how much players, like, I think it's easy to think like that, to look at a guy like Colby Shelton, for instance, with the White Sox, was not on the preseason 30, sixth round pick last year. Really, off of that, you can say like very fringe of the 30. He was a sixth round pick for a reason last year coming out of college. And then you watch, look at him now, and he's number 11 in their system. You went from off the list to 11. And it's like, no, like, he's made real changes. But the other thing is that we always like to emphasize this. The difference between Seth Hernandez on the Pirates list and the guy at 8 or 9 on the Pirates list is much larger, I would say, than the difference between the guy who's 12th on the Pirates list and the guy who's 35th. Because it really does kind of have the curve that you could have, like, at the very tip top of the prospect landscape, there are very few players. As you get further out, you get toward the base of that, and there are a lot more players in that range. And so players can move up, down, guy gets hurt, guy get, you know, is healthy, all that, you put it all together. But I would say that. And the other thing that was kind of depressing, I would say, that I discovered from it, I knew to some extent, but it's when you sit down to do it that you realize, like, when you know that you've had a team that had a lot of injuries that year, but you start kind of going through and you try to make sure, like, okay, have I accounted for every injury? Have I figured all this out? And you look at a team like the Tigers, and I do believe that the Tigers rehab team in Lakeland is their best minor league team prospect wise right now. Half of their top 30 basically is had an injury, and in a lot of cases, significant injuries of some sort. I will say kind of like, so we did the first pass on this kind of talking about a little bit bigger picture. We're going to get into in a little while kind of players, but like, is there, you said like, Ian, that the Braves were kind of like better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to now be the, I'm going to be the stir things up one here a little bit and ask the question to each of y'all, and I'll do it too. Is there an organization that you kind of came away as you did this realizing, oh, they're kind of at a little bit of a weaker spot right now? Josh, any one of your orgs that you did? Because by the way, we all did like six or so orgs of the 30.
Got off easy. I got five.
Yeah.
I got my standard handbook. Hey, you're the one who assigned it. Blame you.
Yeah.
You know, I think my orgs are in two pretty similar tiers. The Phillies, Yankees, and Rangers are all mid to worse right now, and I think they'd tell you that. There's some good stuff at the top of all those systems, and unfortunately with the Rangers, the real good stuff is injured with, you know, Walcott having the surgery and Scarborough coming back from cancer. And the other guys are a little lower. You know, like Josh Owens is obviously a ways away. Yolfran Castillo is a ways away. Guys like that in, you know, it's not the best system in the world. The Dodgers system, as I think we'll talk about later, is loaded for bear with outfielders. Its pitching is not in a great spot right now. It's hard to find like a true starting pitching prospect in that organization. And the Giants have a lot of stuff up and down the list. I mean, Bryce Eldridge is a prospect for a couple more days, but after you have him, you've got the dynamic duo in the ACL, you've got some guys in Eugene who are interesting, you've got some guys who've taken jumps forward, and another guy that jumped from off to on that we'll talk about later. So I think that there's kind of I don't have any like 15 to 17 range system. I think I either have top third or bottom third.
Ian, what about you?
I think the thing that really stood out to me was just how big of a drop off there is in the Red Sox system after the top 10. The top 10 was the easiest top 10 I had to do of any of the orgs. It was extremely straightforward. There was no even consideration for anyone else. And then after that 10, it was just kind of a build your own adventure situation. And I think it's just because there's a lot of volatility in the players outside of the top 10. There's a lot of guys on an FCL team that looks very talented. Saw a bunch of those guys in spring training, and there's some new ones have kind of emerged as the season's got going. So you have the volatility of players in the FCL. You have a lot of pitchers who are either, you know, injured or coming back from injuries or coming back from Rule 5, guys like Angel Bastardo and Jadickson Páez. And then you just kind of have some upper minors guys who are not necessarily – they're either performing in the case of Eduardo Rivera, someone ended up way higher than I initially anticipated, or they're guys that have kind of been okay in AAA. They might be major league depth. They might be more like, you know, 4A types. It's kind of sifting through that right now. So that was pretty surprising to me. And then I think the other one is – that, and this is, I guess, maybe more of the positive side, but the Rays, it's interesting how, you know, with some systems, it's pretty easy to find 30 names. And then there's no real like wiggle room outside of that. It's like, oh, these are the 30. This is fine. Doing like the Rays system, my initial draft had 54 names. And it's just, you know, you see the difference in the talent and it's the depth. And you can kind of, it's reflected in the way we do the grading system, because I think you can look in the adjusted grades and see where the tiers kind of play out, what you were talking about with, you know, within the tiers, some are much larger than others. At the top, it's very small, and then it kind of widens out. With the Rays, you know, you get off their list and there were another 10, 15 guys I could have easily considered for the back 30 that would have been on the back 30 in some of my other systems. And so it was interesting kind of seeing that and looking at the way the tiers ended up, using the adjusted grades, that, you know, the Rays, I think their entire top 30, it took down to the very end of the top 30 to get into adjusted 30s, where some of my other systems in the teens, you're getting into adjusted 30s. And so I think it just shows the Rays, and they're about to get another high draft pick too. So they're in a really good spot, I think.
I still lament Tayton Gray was number, I think, 24 yep. on the top 30. When we started this, you know, rolled out the handbook last year, and then they kept making moves. And he was off of the list for the update in January because of all the moves. And now he's, you know, leapt up it with the update. But at the same time, it's like, there are so many orgs where I have that were like, he would have been a slam dunk top 20 kind of guy. But yes, they were that deep. They're just that deep. For me, the one I would say again, like that's it's understandable. The Reds have graduated Sal Stewart, who I know he's not been as good in May, but has been really good and kind of a fixture in the middle of their lineup. They graduated Rhett Lauder. Chase Burns graduated at the very end of last year and has been very good for them as well. So it's not like you don't look at the Reds and go, oh, they haven't produced anything. But then you look at the Reds top 30 right now. And with those graduations, Edwin Arroyo's had a really strong kind of bounce back his second year back from shoulder surgery. Alfredo Duno's been fine, better as it's warmed up in the Midwest League. You get past that and you're like, what I was kind of looking for, I kind of felt like at the back of the 10, I was like, there's got to be someone else here for the 10. And they're really, you got to the back of the 20s and it's like, I was adding guys, like I added Ovis Portas, Ian, a favorite of yours and mine. But like, even as I'm writing them up, I'm like, okay, there's a lot that has to go right here for a guy who's taken a very slow climb through the minor leagues, just made it to Midwest League and has really struggled for a couple of Midwest League starts after I think it was his third season in low A. So yeah, so that's the kind of thing you're talking about. But we know that you want to hear about a lot of the players. You want to hear about the prospects. So that's what we're going to do next. We're going to go around a couple of times and talk about some prospects, non-top 100 prospects, who popped up, who really kind of impressed us as we were doing this. And we'll do that right after this quick break.
We love our dog Bella, who splays out in the open sun on our floor like she's an underwear model. And that's why we love her so much, to scratch her belly.
She's a cutie, that Bella. And a quick message from today's sponsor, the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. If you're frantically looking for what to do with your pup when they have an issue, the program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier to get your pet the care they need. When you enroll in an ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Plan, you could get a $25 Amazon gift card. It's a little treat for you while you're doing something great for your pet. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/foul. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/FOUL. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit aspcapetinsurance.com/Amazon terms for more info. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
And we're back. So, Ian, I'll start off with you this time, but who is a prospect? We may do this three times. Who's a prospect who, this part's fun, who's a prospect who, as you were doing this, you came away more impressed? You kind of like came away going, okay, I liked him, or maybe I didn't even know that much about him. And as I got done with it, I'm really kind of filed him in the, okay, I'm going to keep a closer eye on that guy as you moved him up the list.
I think the first name that jumps to mind with that is a Diamondbacks prospect, Geno Groover. He was someone who, he was in the mid-teens coming into in the preseason update. And just kind of the feedback, talking to scouts, just watching some action of him, you know, started to become a little more of a believer. And it's a weird profile. He is a corner infielder with below average power, but he really hits. Like, I think he's hit 300 at every level throughout his entire career. He's doing the exact same thing this year. And the thing that really has changed for him this year is the defense. He's never going to be a Gold Glove caliber third baseman. He's never probably going to be even above average, but he has a chance to get to average now, and which is something that a couple of years ago, I think would have been kind of a pipe dream. He was seen more as a first base only guy. And if he, given his contact ability and the quality of the bats he puts together and how much confidence there is in his hit tool, if he can even be a fringy third baseman and play there, you know, half the time, he turns into someone who has a chance to be a, maybe a fringe regular. And I think that, you know, going in, I thought, oh, the there's no power. It's a weird profile. But it just, you know, confidence in the hit tool and improved defense, and it can make a world of difference for someone like him.
Josh, what about you?
There's a right-hander in the Yankees system named Ben Grable, who was on the hot sheet Helium list this past week, who I didn't know much about coming into the year. He was, I think, their 11th rounder out of the University of Indiana last year. And his fastball is witchcraft. You know, it's 95 plus, touch 97 with, according to our data, averages over 21 inches of vert. And right now he's been dominating, or he dominated high A mostly with that pitch. He's got a couple others, he's got a slider that some scouts will say is, could get to above average, and the very, very, very occasional split. But the fastball was enough at high A. He's a little more resistance at double A. But if you told me that kid was a kid, he's 24. That guy gets to the big leagues first out of the Yankees 2025 draft class, I wouldn't be surprised. So that was a guy that really jumped up for me.
Okay, we're going to do this, I think, three times. My first one I'm going to do is Justin Campbell with the Guardians, who I would say was probably the toughest guy to figure out how to rank, because both may have very much underranked him in the top 30 for the Guardians and may have overranked him. And I don't know which it is right now. And I'll lay out why, which is because on one hand, when you say injury history for a pitcher, Justin Campbell makes Daniel Espino seem like, you know, he's basically Iron Joe McGinty. I mean, it's something where Campbell had not pitched since he was drafted in 22 until this year. So 22, 23, 24, 25. He had multiple surgeries over that time to resolve a variety of issues. So you could argue, okay, durability is going to be a real concern. You could also, though, argue that this is a guy who might be starting games for Cleveland this year, even though he had not pitched in pro ball until this year, because when you also talk to scouts about him, you talk to, you know, Franz Fischel about him, he's really good. Like it's not something where the stuff bounced, but, you know, dropped off. The stuff's still really good. He has multiple pitches. He has feel. He sets up hitters. He's been moved pretty quickly already this year, been promoted. Again, we don't know, like, can he hold up? Can he maintain the stuff? Those are questions that are very difficult to answer right now. But if you look at him and say, on pure talent, like of what you're watching on the field, I underranked him. You know, he's in the, I think, 17 on that Guardians list. And you could argue for the top 10, even though it's a very deep top 10, I would say. You could also say, like, you're crazy to put him that high. You should have probably put him in the back of the 20s, because let's see him do it for more than 40 innings, because he's really struggled to stay healthy. So that's where I would say that there's a big challenge with a guy like that. Daniel Espino's in that group too, and I moved him up too, but I know he's been a little wild, but his stuff looks really good as well. But he actually, I feel like we've seen him in the AFL a little bit. Now we're seeing him, he's in a relief role. It's just a little bit easier, a little bit safer to be like, okay, I think he can hopefully hold up in that relief role in comparison to Campbell, who I would say, like, his value, a lot of it is maybe as a starter, because he really does have the ability to mix a wide array of pitches. Coming back around, Ian, to you again, who's another guy who jumped out to you?
Next one for me is with the Orioles, and it's a left-handed pitcher named Caden Hunter. He was selected in the sixth round out of USC last year. Didn't receive a big bonus. Wasn't really, you know, he was a fine draftee. I think he received a round slot. And he's come in, and it's low A Delmarva, but he has been absolutely dominant. He's on the hot sheet this week also. After having 18 strikeouts in a week, he pitched twice. I think it was in 8 2/3 innings. For the season, he has 31 strikeouts in 19 innings, and he's allowed 2 runs. And his velo is way up. Last year at USC, he was like 91, 93, you know, maybe get to 94. Occasionally, I think his high was 97, but it was mostly, you know, 91 and 94. He's averaging 93.7 miles an hour on his fastball this year, and he's up to 97 pretty routinely. So he's sitting, you know, 93 to 95 from the left side. Above average whiff rate on the fastball, 19 inches of vert. He's got really good separation with his changeup. Got a slider, like both secondaries flash above average. And he definitely needs to move up to the next level, but he's a guy coming in, was not on the top 30, but just, yeah, really good feedback and just potential for 3, you know, above average pitches from a college lefty in the sixth round. Looks like a really nice find by the Orioles.
Josh, what about you?
Back to the Giants system. Jonah Cox had been off the list entering the year. He had spent too much time in Eugene, which is a sentence I didn't think I'd ever say, certainly. But he got to the Squirrels and is hitting, you know, 4-something. And, you know, I was talking to the, you know, people with the Giants, and, you know, he's at 400. He probably should be on the list. And then, well, like, he's going to do that. If that's going to be what he is, he's going to be at number one on the list. But, you know, we'll wait till that BABIP kind of evens out a little bit. But there are real swing changes there. He's made more contact. He's becoming more of the player that they thought he was going to be. He plays excellent defense in center field. He can run. Now, if he can make more contact and, you know, turn that speed into more of an asset on the base paths, that he's back into the 20s again. And well, we'll rise at least a spot here in a couple of days when Bryce graduates. But if he keeps doing this, obviously he's going to move up the list a little bit, and that would be a player development win for the Giants.
Next, what I'm going to do is the center fielder for the Tigers, Jesus Pinto, missed most of last year at the DSL with a hamstring injury, but promoted this year, most of rookie ball. I can't remember. I think it was DSL, but top of my head, if it was DSL, it was a complex, but has been healthy this year and is really hitting. It's a center fielder who he's going to have to work to stay in center. He's not a great runner now. We'll see how his body kind of matures and whether he can hold on that speed. But especially if he can stay in center field, he's really intriguing. Maybe hits enough to be a corner. I do like him. Like when you watch him hit, there is some real clear feel for hitting there, I think, as well. Again, a guy who was not ranked on our list kind of coming into the year, partly because you kind of wanted to see him, basically do it on the field, because a hamstring injury really kind of really derailed him last year. But I'd say probably the best attribute he has is it's really good barrel control, really good bat to ball skills. His miss rate is pretty microscopic, like one of the better in the Tiger system, really one of the better in Class A, especially a level where a lot of guys swing and miss a lot. But kind of an intriguing guy to keep an eye on, see how kind of it develops over the year. We're going to do this again. We're going to do this one more time, go around and talk about prospects who kind of stood out to us. But we'll do that right after this quick break. And we're back. So I'll start off this one. I hate to come back to the Guardians again, but there is another guy in the Guardians. They had a lot of interesting guys. But I think, Josh, you may have even seen this guy before, but Robert Arias with the Guardians is a center fielder, a younger center fielder. I kind of just really kind of came away. He's had good numbers this year, kind of dove in, kind of watching him, talking to people about him. But like the thing that really stood out about him is it's a very pull heavy approach, but not a pull heavy. I'm looking to just hit homers. If he was, it would be a stupid idea for him. But it's really about, it's kind of like, it's an approach that looks like it maybe should not work. He really takes this massive leg lift, balances on his back. It's kind of almost, I would say, an Asian hitter, a Japanese hitter kind of feel to it, where it's all about fluidity and balance and flow into the swing, but it all works for him pretty well. And this is a guy who has great speed. He's a threat on the base paths. He is a rangy center fielder. I do think there's some things that have to be cleaned up a little bit. Don't always catch the ball the easiest, but there was a lot there really to like, and especially for a guy who's young and kind of has a lot of development ahead of him. He was definitely one who kind of opened some eyes, I would say, both by what he's doing, but kind of the tools he's done it with. And I think not only have you seen him this year, Josh, but I think you've written him up in the past also, because I think he was a an ACL top prospect.
No, it was a DSL.
DSL.
It might have been ACL too, but ACL was one of the where he came. I mean, it sounds like, if I'm remembering correctly, it's kind of chapter and verse what you saw. I was more interested in a couple other guys on those clubs, but you know, he's having quite a loud year with the new and improved Hill City Howlers club. I'm not surprised he's up arrow.
But what about for you?
For me, I could go with catcher for the Philadelphia Phillies, Illyrio Farabus. He has been injured a lot, and now he's healthy and he's raking in Clearwater. You know, it's probably an offense first catcher because he's a bigger guy, but the offense might be real. He moved into the top 10. I wouldn't be surprised to see him hit Jersey Shore at some point in the next couple of weeks, months. I guess that's way too vague, but he'll get to high A for the first time this year, I assume. But it's, you know, offensive minded catcher is, you know, something that every club wants. And he looks like he's starting to build up that promise thanks to the fact that he's healthy. He was a big mover along with Ramon Marquez in that system. So that's kind of guy who pops out for me.
And what about you, Ian?
For me, another one would be Eduardo Rivera with the Red Sox. I briefly mentioned him earlier, but he was unranked coming in, and he's a guy who has always had very good stuff. He just never has been able to throw strikes consistently. He's never had a walk rate below 10% in his career. And his walk rate so far this year is under 7%. And He is throwing strikes at a rate he's never done before. He made his major league debut, obviously, at a very memorable game against the Yankees. Allowed one hit, I believe, in 3 1/3 innings. And so far, he in AAA, since he got sent back down, in 12 2/3 innings, he struck out 19 guys and walked 3. And he was highlighted this week in the StatCast standouts piece because it's a really intriguing arsenal. He just has a bunch of pitches that can miss bats. He's thrown two variations of a slider. There's more like a cut slider than a longer slider. Got four seam changeup. Changeup's really good, really neutralizes right-handed hitters. Has a 60% whiff rate in AAA this year. And then both the four seam and the slider have above average whiff rates. And, you know, when you've got that kind of power stuff from a 6'7" frame with, you know, a lot of moving parts, that's kind of, it's a deceptive delivery. It's hard to pick up. You finally start throwing strikes, and that becomes a guy who goes from, you know, outside the top 30 to major league depth right now. And I think it's interesting. The Red Sox, instead of stretching him back out since they sent him down, they've continued to use him in kind of a multi-inning bulk relief role, which I think is a preview of probably what his long-term role is. You know, it's working right now, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think right now that he's a good example of someone that they found something with the strike throwing. He's got the stuff, and continue him in this role. And then whenever they need help at the major league level, I think he's someone who will be up at some point again this year.
Those are some, I think that's 9 different players who kind of stood out from the top 30s. Much more over at baseballamerica.com. Obviously, we've got 30 reports for 30 different organizations. We also, as you're reading this or listening to this, you will also can check out at Baseball America. We've highlighted risers, fallers, graduates, injuries all up this morning as you listen to this and or watch this at baseballamerica.com. Thank you for joining us. For Josh, for Ian, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.